You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up Here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
7:06 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan, and if you want to get involved in the program, please do, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. We were talking about commencement speakers and the uproar from Marquette students over Chris Duffy, an AI executive who is giving their commencement speech. And then we were talking about if we even remembered ours. Jamie, Tiffany in River Falls remembered hers.
This is such a great text. Funny. Yeah, she's listed on WCFW 93.5 The Tap in Eau Claire. She says, in 2009, we had an economics professor, a professional, give our graduation speech, and the gist was, good luck, kids, there's a recession. Truest speech there ever was. I appreciate that. We also had Ted from Appleton give us a call. He wanted the show to be expanded to 3 hours, Brian, and voila, here we are.
From your mouth to God's ears, Ted, we started doing 3 hours on Monday, and we couldn't be happier. We hope, and well, now Ted's going to be happier.
Yes.
I hope he didn't mean he wants it to start at 5 and then end at 8. We're going to stick with the same 6 o'clock start time and go till 9.
I mean, the 6 o'clock start time some days, let's be real, and I don't want to like sit here and whine because I know what we do is not that hard in comparison to what other people do, but...
Everybody's going to think they can do it.
6 a.m. some days, it's rough, but it's good. We do have
anybody
a good time here.
Anybody who gets up early is in the same boat. We're all, you know, nobody wants to get up at the crack of dawn.
No.
I don't care what you do. I don't care how much you love your job or your family. You still don't want to get up that early.
At the crack of dawn, I would give for the crack of dawn, honestly.
I was going to say, we are very pre-dawn.
Yeah, but hang on.
Especially this time here.
Time change is coming.
Yeah.
And then we'll be up.
Oh, the spring forward, folks.
It is.
It's coming.
Is
that like this weekend or next?
March 8th, I believe.
Don't spread disinformation.
We're getting close. Hey, it was a question.
Oh, was it?
Can't be misinformation if it was a question, can it?
I don't know. Can it?
Well, it could be if we give the wrong answer, but at any rate.
I think it could. You know who's up and working hard?
Mm.
It's Senator Mark Kelly, and he is once again taking on Pete Hegseth, the defense secretary, because if you remember correctly, Pete didn't like the fact that Mark Kelly and some other legislators, all who had served in the military...
And were Democrats.
And were Democrats. Well, I don't even think we need to say that, but we'll say it. It's obvious. Because only a godless Democrat would dare to challenge the administration, Jamie. We know that without, you know, any sort of preamble. But there was the video where they just, all these legislators and former service people reminded military personnel that the military code of conduct says you do not have to follow an unlawful order. They never mentioned the president by name. You remember this whole thing. Well, then, oh, boy, that really ruffled some feathers. And then there was talk of indictments. They were going to strip Mark Kelly of his pension. They were going to do all this. Well, that may not be happening because, once again, a judge has stepped in and gone, sorry, bro, Pete, this ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, Pete Hegseth is not giving up because he's going to move forward with an appeal after that judge blocked any sort of punishment from Mark Kelly or any of the other Democrats. And if you remember this video that was posted back in November of 2025, Donald Trump actually called the lawmakers' actions sedition on social media. And then Hegseth went along and just echoed the president's criticism of these six lawmakers. A Washington grand jury recently declined to indict any of the representatives or senators in this video. Kelly says this appeal is an attempt to silence dissent, while Hegseth maintains the video crossed a line. The case
what
now,
line, Pete? It's written down. If you had read the military code of conduct, you would know it's there. But if you've seen Pete try to do a push-up, you know quit is not in his vocabulary. or a pull-up.
I was going to say it's the pull-up, right? The it's pull-up, Kid Rock and RFK who like to do the push-ups
they like the
together.
Push-ups, yeah. Pete will kick his legs like he is a kung fu fighter to try to get that pull-up undone.
He
will not quit.
He sure will. The case now heads to a federal appeals court, and there's obviously a broader question about the free speech and how this administration wants to test retired military officers. Now, here's where this all gets tricky, though, for Pete Hegseth. Okay? It's like this administration doesn't actually communicate with one another. Because just late last week, federal prosecutors in Washington dropped their efforts to charge those six Democratic lawmakers over that same social media video.
That's good.
Now, earlier this month, as we mentioned, that federal grand jury unanimously declined to indict the group. They're saying there was no probable cause that a crime had even been committed. Apparently, Pete was too busy doing pull-ups to understand what was happening in between.
There was no crime.
There was no crime.
They didn't question the commander-in-chief.
No.
They didn't. They said it was just a reminder. And I keep hammering on that and repeating that because that was the whole basis of Hegseth and Trump's attack on these people. All they did was remind you what you have already signed when you joined the military, what you should have read, what Pete Hegseth, as the Secretary of Defense, should know by heart.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Now, this particular case, in case you haven't been following along that closely, was actually brought by U.S. Attorney Jeanine Pirro's office. And the
TV judge?
The TV judge, who has not been able to get a case through the courts yet. Every case that she has brought through the courts at this particular time has ended up failing, and they've basically had to pull it back and say, we're not going to prosecute that now. Turns out we're just not going to do it.
That's the kind of cracked legal mind I want as a U.S. attorney.
Well, you know, if you ever dabbled in the show on Fox or her shows, because she was on a couple, you know that the crack legal mind was not always the soundest legal mind when it came to Jeanine Pirro. Now, with the grand jury's decision and the fact that Pirro is essentially said, we're not going to prosecute this, the case is effectively over in Washington.
Nothing is over until we decide it is.
So for Pete Hegseth to continue through this appeals process, he would essentially have to take it outside of a court outside of Washington, D.C. in order for this to continue. So, obviously, there's a little disconnect in this administration as to the reality of what's happening and what we think is going to happen.
Pete, you poor dumb slob. It's just, he doesn't get it. He's in over his head. He's come up against a career military man who's been decorated. He is a legit hero. Let's not forget he was also an astronaut, a fighter pilot. Mark Kelly, again, knows what he's doing. And you don't go into battle when you are outgunned and outmanned. And that is what Hegseth has done. He has wandered in to a fray with everybody who's mentioned. He's gone after the biggest names that were on that video, and they are all smarter than him. They all know the military better than he does. They are ready for everything. And he didn't have a legal leg to stand on, and yet he's going to keep fighting and embarrassing himself, and every day proving more and more, even to the people who don't want to believe it, that he is not suitable for this job and he has no business doing it.
Now, I think it's interesting because some of the representatives and senators in this video not only had military background, but they also have intelligence backgrounds.
Uh-huh.
So we're talking Senators Alyssa Slotkin of Michigan, obviously Mark Kelly, Representatives Maggie Goodlander, Jason Crow, who actually just appeared, who was in Wisconsin and is doing some roundtable discussions later today in other parts of the state, Chris DeLuzio and Chrissy Houlihan. Those are people with actual military and intelligence backgrounds, not somebody just cosplaying, that this is what, and calling themselves the overlord of the War Department or whatever he calls himself now. I mean, and I hate to be facetious about it, but that's essentially where we're at, right?
At some point, you have to call a spade, and he is not smart. He is in way over his head, and he has no business being where he's at. And you picked a fight with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we have to, it's good. And again, but this will, like for Jeanine Pirro not getting a case through and the grand jury voting unanimously, it's the same thing if you look back at all, how many election fraud cases have been brought to court and thrown out, over 60. None of them had any sort of legal basis. This administration and the people in it do not care.
No.
They think they can make the headline by taking something to court, and people, because they keep throwing more stuff at the wall, people will lose interest. And all they'll remember was, oh yeah, there were charges filed against Alyssa Slotkin and Mark Kelly for this. Yes, they committed sedition when, let's be honest, unless you're in the military or study history or are just, you know, curious enough to Google, you don't know what sedition is.
No.
But we know it's serious because the president said sedition is punishable by death. Okay, well, we know that much. But they don't care. It's all about the headline. It's all about the sizzle. It's the short term. We're gonna get our message out. And I don't care if it lasts a week or 2 weeks or 2 minutes. The message is out there, and that's what we depend on. More and more disinformation, more and more information that is skewed, and just get the headline and get out of the way.
John over on social media chiming in on the conversation saying, a disconnect with reality and the Trump regime? Nah, don't believe it. Alicia also chiming in saying, Mark Kelly was an A6 intruder pilot. That is an attack aircraft, not a fighter. So thank you for the correction, Alicia.
Thanks for clearing it up.
She has a military background, so I trust that knowledge. What we're actually seeing play out is a vendetta. Because Donald Trump feels like these lawmakers said something negative against him, even though, again, they never brought his name into that 90-second video. And that's the other thing. It was a 90-second video. This is what we're making a big deal about, a 90-second video where they never mentioned the president's name and they didn't tell military personnel to do anything that they're not already instructed to do. If the grand jury's decision means anything here, it is time to move on. Pete Hegseth, if he is actually going to cosplay as the leader of the War Department, it's time to move on. Go do something that actually pertains to your real job, or at least try, pretend you're doing it. Because continuing to escalate this, it only deepens the concerns for dissent. Even from decorated veterans, it's being treated as disloyalty, and that is a dangerous line that this administration is trying to blur right now.
Yeah. Or Pete, do the right thing, do the honorable thing, and leave. Just realize that you're not cut out.
What else is he going to do?
He could go back to his old gig, which was, again, weekend anchor at Fox. Oh, they'd welcome him and his tattooed torso back in a minute. He is the former Secretary of War.
That's.
I say that only when I'm being as sarcastic as possible
I'm going to ask a serious question. What is it with the people in this administration, Kash Patel, Pete Hegseth, who think this is a frat party? Kash Patel in the locker room with the hockey team partying like it's 1999. You've got Pete Hegseth who is trying to do pull-up contests with RFK. I mean, this is not a frat. You are running the country and important divisions of it.
It's a sad reflection of the administration and their vision of strength and prosperity. Trump is what he thinks poor people envision rich and powerful people to be. That's what he endeavors to be. And it's not there. And it is echoed in all his social media thirsty acolytes. And it's disgusting.
Remember when I said I wanted Bush and Cheney back? This is why. This is exactly why. Nobody was having pull-up contests there.
No, but let's take a breath and we'll play Swipe or Stay after this. This is Daybreak with Brian and Jamie on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Let's break out of the bubble and see what's happening out there in pop culture. It's Swiper Stay on Daybreak.
Yes, it is time for Swiper Stay every morning at 7:22 because we are incessantly repeating things. It's called the Daily Segment. We enjoy them. We hope you do, too. Swiper Stay, hosted by our own senior producer, Mr. Frank. Welcome, Frank. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys. You know, when we were planning this show, I was like, how can we just repeat ourselves over and over? And I thought this was a great way to do it.
Best way to do it.
No, and then, you know what's great is, Frank, because we just repeat the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
We know the answers already.
Yeah.
Of course. No, they have no idea what's going on. It's Swiper Stay. I'm going to give you some vague pop culture headlines.
Truer words could never be spoken. They have no idea what's going on. Truer words from our producer.
That's the tagline for the show. That's our elevator pitch.
Jamie and Brian will hear these vague headlines and will have to decide whether they want to stay and hear more about the story and talk about it or swipe on it. So let's start with story number one. A powerful figure admits to having affairs.
I'm always up for a good infidelity story. I'm going to stay.
Stay, yeah.
We're saying this figure has been in the headlines quite a bit recently. So Bill Gates dropped the bombshell, admitting to having affairs with a Russian bridge player who he met at bridge events, and a Russian nuclear physicist who he met through business activities.
Wow.
Hold on. This is the best part. Bill Gates told his staff this on Tuesday during a town hall session for the Gates Foundation.
Time and place.
Why? Why do you bring that to a town hall session with your staff?
He took the lead from the guy in the Olympics who told the world that he had cheated on his girlfriend.
That was so
weird.
Bill
was like, it worked for that guy. Look at how much press he got.
He was endeared to the fans.
Exactly.
Wow.
If I had to guess, I think it was for transparency's sake because he did also mention appearing in the Epstein files.
Wow.
He apologized for associating with Jeffrey Epstein, saying he never saw or did anything illicit.
Mm. I'll be honest. If you had said to me, what kind of woman would Bill Gates have an affair with? Russian nuclear scientist would be right up there, and Russian bridge player tracks too. Hold on. Are these honeypots, as the espionage people like to call them? It's very, very interesting.
It's intriguing.
Bill Gates really into Russian women.
Apparently so.
He felt that he needed to tell his entire staff.
And I'm sure they were all like, that's not awkward, boss. Thanks.
Or, you know, everybody was relieved because they're like, why did he and Melinda divorce?
Or they were like, that checks. That makes total sense. Okay, could we get to something we didn't already figure? I mean, there could be that aspect of it, too. Interesting.
Ah,
Bill.
Moving on to story number two. A celebrity's friend denied a restraining order from his wife.
A celebrity's friend filed
a restraining order.
Okay.
Against his friend's wife?
Correct.
Against the celebrity's wife or his wife?
Against the celebrity's
wife. All right, I'll say stay.
Now that it's the celebrity's wife getting the restraining order filed against her, I'm in.
I like a good rumor mill.
Will Smith's friend, Bilal Salam, filed a restraining order against Will Smith's wife and actress Jada Pinkett Smith. In his earlier paperwork, Bilal claimed he had been seriously harmed emotionally and mentally Jada Pinkett Smith's harassment, saying the repeated threats and public false accusations have caused me extreme stress, anxiety, humiliation, and fear for my safety.
This one
went to court. Both had to testify, and the court ruled that there was not enough evidence to approve the restraining order.
But did she get him, Will, to slap somebody for her?
Sounds like she was doing that herself in this case.
It does.
Allegedly.
It does.
Allegedly. Was there ever somebody of your significant other's friends that you wish you could have filed a restraining order against?
I married somebody who didn't have any friends. That was nice. I did a background check.
It's easier to not have friends at all. I mean, let's be honest.
Yes, exactly, right?
It's easier to just not have friends. We'll stop there.
Friends are overrated.
As another married person, I can't agree with that. Parker, take notes. It's notes to just not have friends.
Yes, it is.
Moving on. Saturday Night Live announces its host schedules for the next couple of weeks.
I'm going to pass.
Swipe.
I'm going to swipe, yeah. Swipe.
80s movie star accused of abuse in new lawsuit.
Ooh, stay.
Back to the Future star Crispin Glover.
Oh.
He's still around?
Marty McFly's dad.
He is.
George
McFly allegedly manipulated a model from the United Kingdom to be his live-in girlfriend in Los Angeles and work for him for free.
Okay.
Then he locked her out of his home and beat her. And now she says she's homeless. This is all according to a new lawsuit. This is completely alleged right now. A representative for Crispin Glover said, Mr. Glover denies these baseless allegations in the strongest possible terms. The reality is that on March 2nd, 2024, Mr. Glover was the victim of an unprovoked felony assault by this woman at his Los Angeles residence.
Wow.
So they're going to defend this. He very much denies.
She is not his density.
No.
But yeah,
to Back to the Future reference. Well, he's always been an unusual cat. Remember when he was on Letterman and tried to kick him in the head, and then he was gone. He's an unusual duck.
Yeah,
but wow. Okay.
George McFly was actually the perfect role for him. Like I always thought George McFly was the perfect role
just
for him.
Weird,
yes,
creepy.
Yeah,
guy.
Yeah.
He was a peeping Tom.
Yes.
Real quick, we got the 1 minute signal.
Okay.
Yes. SNL musical guest trashed a set. Do you want to know who it was?
Yes.
Yes.
Stay.
It was Cardi B.
That tracks.
Wow. She threw her phone through a monitor and started punching a screen in a producer's office because the Weekend Update hosts had a joke in the rundown about Nicki Minaj. Who she has beef with.
Is she just having a bad day because Stefan Diggs broke up with her?
This was from a while ago,
okay.
But...
All right. Just asking.
Probably.
Just asking.
Well, listen, Frank, that was great. Thank you. That's our Swiper Stay every day at this time. And then now we turn back to the news. The regular news.
We're going to talk
about... I'm Brian Noonan.
Cuba. I'm Jamie Martinson. You're listening to Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
It's 7:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're listening on WLCX in La Crosse or on WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, maybe you are in Hayward listening on WBZH. Thank you so much for joining us today. Hey, I don't know if you saw the big news, but J.D. Vance is actually in Wisconsin today, Brian.
I saw that. I'm sure every furniture store has shut down out of, just a precaution.
Sure.
But yes, he's here and he's...
Yeah, he's visiting a machining facility in Plover, Wisconsin today. He'll be delivering remarks to celebrate the president's accomplishments following the State of the Union address that was held on Tuesday night. It's part of this post-speech highlighting of this tour he's going to be doing post-speech, highlighting the economic policies of the president.
Do you find it curious, though, that the president is out of sight and had nothing on his calendar yesterday, and I don't believe he has anything till later today?
No. That's not actually surprising with the president. If you've been kind of following the pattern of this administration over the last few months, there's been a lot of skepticism and a lot of, undertone conversations about the president's health. And there's been a lot of clearing of his schedule as well, especially after big events. They've been clearing it out for a couple of days. So
it's like after you take your dog to the vet and they sleep for the next 2 days.
It was
and
a
yes,
late
I
night
did just
for
make
him.
That analogy.
It was a late night for
him.
I mean, the fact that speech started at 9 p.m. For any president was, to me, extremely late, especially 9 p.m. Eastern time. And then to sit there and speak for an hour and 48 minutes. I mean, heck, I'm 48 years old. I'd probably need a couple days to recoup, though, too.
Right. But if you know that, and I know, God forbid, they show any weakness of the president, then do it like an early bird special. Start your speech at 5 so you can get to bed, so you're not out of commission for the next two days.
Right.
You know, ooh, that took a lot out of me. Just go at like 6, nice 6 o'clock, maybe do a half hour,
the world would have
minutes.
Thanked you, because for anybody who hung on to every word of that, it was a long night. It was a really long night. Now, the other thing I was going to ask you, speaking of being out of commission, have you noticed something that since that the Epstein Senate hearings where Pam Bondi shrieked at senators, we have not seen her in public since that day, essentially?
No.
She's been kind of under wraps. Like, they put her on a shelf for a while.
Boy, and that's following the same pattern. Kristi Noem, suddenly she's not out dressing up, playing Halloween as much as she used to be. She's put away. She's focusing more on getting the quote-unquote right people elected, but she's not out in the forefront. Pam Bondi, who, in a lot of people's opinion, mine included, embarrassed the administration by her performance. She has not been heard of. JD was on the shelf for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you fall out of favor, even for a perceived infraction, it doesn't have to be anything overt.
Right.
The president will sideline you, and he has done that. Well, he sidelined himself now, as we said, for the last 2 days.
I was just going to say,
Pam Bondi, after she shrieked about the Dow being up to 50,000 and then wouldn't look at the victims. Yeah, they haven't.
We haven't seen much from her.
Out of her cage.
No, we haven't seen much from her. Just some random observations as we go over the next probably few days, anyway. And if you're in Plover, motorcades will be coming through later today.
Yeah, so good luck to you. You know what else we haven't seen? Venezuelan drug boats, Jamie. Those were the scourge of American security for a few months. And then magically they disappeared once the oil disappeared from Venezuela too.
Right.
But now drug boats are back in the news because Cuban border forces shot and killed 4 people above a floor. Aboard a Florida registered speedboat that came into Cuban territorial waters yesterday, just about 100 miles from Florida. So speedboats and alleged drug boats are back in the news. This time it's Cuba taking them out.
Yeah, and these were Cuban territorial waters that this boat was shot in. And Cuba officials say that patrol boats moved to intercept this 24-foot vessel yesterday when someone on board allegedly fired first, wounding the commander of the Cuban patrol boat. Now, border guards returned fire. They killed 4 people and injured 6 others. The nationalities of the victims have not yet been confirmed. However, we just got this update in within a couple of hours ago. Cuba now says that the boat that opened fire was carrying Cubans living in the U.S. trying to infiltrate the island and unleash terrorism.
Boy, that sounds like they're just swapping public, public statements back and forth between our country and Cuba.
Yeah. So Secretary of State Marco Rubio says that the U.S. Embassy in Havana is seeking access to those who did survive to determine whether they're permanent residents, whether they are American citizens. I mean, really, at this point, they're trying to parse all of this out. The Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Coast Guard are also investigating. Speaking of Vice President J.D. Vance, he says that the White House is monitoring the situation. Well, thank you for that, JD.
Yeah, they have Fox News on.
They do.
That's their monitoring strategy.
They're going to the Department of War to find out what's happening, and Pete Hegseth is giving them all of the updates they need. Of course, we're joking. Maybe not. The incident comes amid heightened tensions between Washington and Havana. U.S. sanctions and blocked oil shipments have deepened Cuba's economic crisis. Cuban authorities say that they were defending their territorial waters. Florida officials are calling for a full investigation and accountability as more of these details emerge.
This sounds so familiar. So familiar. Let's jump back for a minute. We were talking about the president being out of commission for the last couple of days. Dixon Madison, he has an interesting theory, and you can share yours too. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Dick, welcome to the show.
I think it might have something to do with the Epstein documents that are starting to, even Rupert Murdoch's rag, the Wall Street Journal is reporting on it now. But in this Cuban situation, we've been messing with them for about 3 months. We basically cut off all oil going in.
Yeah.
And brought them pretty near to their knees. So I'm thinking we're going to pick a fight with them as opposed to Iran. It's closer, and it's a little easier.
Thank you for the call. Then he could monitor everything.
Thanks, Dick. Yeah. He could monitor everything from Mar-a-Lago, White House South. And
isn't that kind of close, though? That seems kind of close to the action. Would he actually go to Mar-a-Lago, or does that
mean... No, he'd send J.D., Marco, and Pete down there. I could see Pete in Bermuda shorts wandering around South Beach,
pretending he's protecting the coast in his bright pink polo. Yes.
You know he's still wearing fluorescence like he's Don Johnson in 1986.
He might think he's Don Johnson from 1986. That might explain a whole lot of what's happening there. But
he found a pop culture icon and stuck with it.
Yes.
This is what I'm going with.
Well, we all have to have our icons. I get it. I loved the 80s, too. this Cuban crisis, this Cuban incident also comes at a time when there's a lot of tensions in the region. And I think that's why this is something that on a lower level, you should probably pay attention to. Mm-hmm. Because the relations between Washington and Havana are strained. The U.S. is trying to choke off, as Dick alluded to, trying to choke off shipments, oil shipments to Cuba. And now they're under more political and economic pressure. And then let's not forget the backdrop of this. This is all happening in the Caribbean, where there's also tensions yet with Venezuela, which include that heightened military and political conflict there, which is adding another layer of complexity to what's happening and what we saw yesterday in the Caribbean. I mean, and maybe it'll be nothing, but I think this is one of those things that on a lower level, we should be paying a little bit of attention to, because let's be realistic, is anything super low level with this administration?
No, everything gets escalated to the highest level because, and this I know, I repeat, but it's create the problem, solve the problem, take credit for the solution to the problem that you created. And that's going to be, and look, we all know there have been problems with Cuba since the 50s. So
that's
Cuba, and they're there, and we deal with them, and they kind of open up to it, and then we don't, and then we go back and forth. So Cuba is always there as like that little thorn in your side that you just can't reach. It's not horribly bothersome, but it's a nuisance. Cuba is more of a nuisance.
I think when something like this happens, though, it's obviously not happening in a vacuum, right? Nope. And so to me, it starts to raise some questions about, particularly for the Hispanic and Cuban American communities. I mean, for people with family ties to the island or even some deep cultural connections to both Cuba and the United States, especially in Florida, this news of gunfire, deaths at sea, it's close to home. And you have to wonder if this is starting to get unsettling for supporters of this administration when they're starting to see these sorts of incidents happen in the Caribbean closer to their home country. And I'll be realistic. I know a lot of people end up leaving Cuba because of the tensions there. But there's still deep ties to the country for a lot of those Cuban Americans.
Yes, there are deep ties. Is their leadership worse than here? But just like any other community, the Hispanic community is so disparate in its, you know, Venezuelans are not the same as Cubans,
right,
who are not the same as Brazilians or Colombians or Mexicans. And so getting the whole group to coalesce around one issue is impossible. That's why we saw so much Hispanic support for this administration in the last election, which
especially among Cuban Americans.
Right. Because they were voting for Donald Trump against the regime in Cuba.
Right.
And that makes sense. Whereas other groups were not. They made the decision that no, we see what he's doing to people of any sort of South American, Latin American background, and we don't want any part of it.
Right. If you want to chime in on today's conversation, we'd love to hear from you via phone call or text 1-855-752-4842, 1-855-75-CIVIC. And this is one of those situations where, like I said, I think it's important to keep an eye on just based on the tensions in the Caribbean. But before we start to jump to assumptions about what's actually going on or what the intention was. I think for a lot of us, the responsible thing to do is to let the investigations play out. Now, whether or not you trust those investigations coming from this administration is a whole nother story.
Or from the Cuba Cuban administration. Both sides are going to be very suspect in what they describe. Just like we didn't know, you know, the two different stories of the Venezuelan boats that we just shot out of the water with no investigations at all. It was just, hey, they're carrying drugs. How do you know? Well, we shot them, didn't we?
Yeah, we've got Patrick chiming in over on the text line this morning. He's listening on WMDX. He says, this is all about little Marco Rubio and the Trump-Putin deal to not interfere in each other's hemisphere. There's been conversation about, the ties that bind there as well. I mean, the theme of this morning's show has been all about the coincidences, because we've talked about them basically since we got on the air at 6 a.m.
Every story has an unusual amount of coincidences that go way past the first simple one.
Mm-hmm.
Then they go on and on, and things begin to coalesce into, well, this was not a coincidence. This seems to be a logical and true chain of events.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets dangerous, because usually with conspiracy, after you go the first couple, then it falls off. But once you get, like in a lot of these, you're getting to 3, 4, 5 coincidences, and that's when it's hard to shake off.
And I think more than just the coincidence of events is the people involved. I think that's the thing that I keep going back to as well. It is 7:48 right now. New polling on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race came out.
That's true. So Charles Franklin will join us. He's a professor of law and public policy. You are listening to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Local news, community stories, and the conversations that matter most. Now, more Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 7:52 right now. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. Thank you so much for joining us today. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And on April 7th, there is going to be another Supreme Court election here in Wisconsin. You remember the last one. Ooh, Matt, that made a lot of news. 41 days away. You know, a Marquette poll always is a good indicator of where things are. And yesterday, a new Marquette poll was released talking about the Supreme Court and other candidates and other races here in the state. Charles Franklin is the professor of law and public policy and the director of the Marquette Law School poll, and he joins us now. Charles, thanks for being here. Good morning. Let's start with the big headline of this poll did concern the Supreme Court race. So what did we find out between the two leading candidates?
Well, I think the biggest thing we found out is that 2/3 of the public haven't made up their minds about this race. Literally 66% said they hadn't made a decision. They were undecided. Now, of those who did decide, Chris Taylor got 17%. Maria Lazar got 12%, a 5-point advantage. But it's hard to call either of those a real lead when, you know, 2/3 of the public haven't made up their minds. We also did a comparison of how much have people read or heard about the race. Only 6% said they'd heard or read a lot. And to compare that 1 year ago with that Supreme Court, it was 39% at this same time. So that's the huge difference between a year ago and now. Is people were quite tuned in to last year's Supreme Court race. So far this year, they haven't yet tuned in.
Charles, is that unusually high of a percentage of people who haven't basically tuned in yet with an election only 41 days away?
It is a little bit surprising. We've gone back and looked at every political primary, and where we have it, the Supreme Court, as I said, we have good measures, exactly the same questions as a year ago. And it's true in the governor's races as well that many fewer people seem to be paying attention to the governor's race or the Supreme Court race at this point. Now, you know, we've got, whatever you said, 41 days to go. And I'm sure people will tune in, but it's tuning in a lot later than usual.
And when you got the respondents' replies, do they give a reason why it is down? I mean, obviously, in 2023, the Democrats were trying to flip the court. There was all this press about Elon Musk and all his money coming in. Are those the reasons that we're not here? I mean, we're not hearing any of this because now the Democrats have the court. They want to keep it, obviously. But it's just a regular old, for lack of a better term, just your average race now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I didn't have the gumption to ask people why they weren't tuned in. So I can't answer that question. But I do think it is so consistent across different races, and it contrasts so much with the previous one that I'm pretty confident that we're not just having a fluke in the poll. I think people really are less tuned in. You know, there is a difference. A year ago, we spent $100 million on that Supreme Court race, and we're not going to spend anywhere near that amount now. There are advertisements that are now out from both judicial candidates, and so those will begin to sink in. Interviews, media appearances, and there will be a debate between the candidates on March 25th. So there's time for people to tune in. One speculation, and it's just a speculation, is that right now people are more focused on the national political scene and what Donald Trump is doing and less focused here in the state. You know, Tip O'Neill famously said all politics is local. But in the modern period, all politics is national. And maybe that's just drawing people's attention away from a lower key court race. And it's got to be said, the majority on the court was up for grabs last year. Right. Now liberals are guaranteed holding their majority. They could expand it if the liberal Taylor wins, or the conservatives could hold their current minority position if Lazar wins. But that's less attention-grabbing than knowing that the balance of the court is up for grabs.
We're talking with Charles Franklin. He is the professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette Law School poll. A new poll just came out yesterday regarding the Supreme Court race and the governor's race here in Wisconsin. We're talking about the number of undecided voters right now. And with those numbers as high as they are across multiple races, is there something in your experience that typically breaks that logjam? Is it going to be the advertising? Is it going to be those debates, the party endorsements, any of the national trends may be dying down along the way here?
Yeah, I think it's when a race, the court race or any other race, when it becomes so visible in the media, that even though you don't seek out information, you see it, right? That's the thing of advertising, is that it hits you in the face when you were trying to watch some enjoyable entertainment television or catch the news. And until that happens, unless you're a political geek like me, or I'm sure much of your audience, you're not likely to encounter that until it's in the news repeatedly, until it's on advertising repeatedly, and debates and other public appearances start to become really prominent, so you kind of can't miss it anymore.
And real quick, Charles, we only have about a minute left. Not too many people who were the subject of the poll got net positive rating. A lot of negative thoughts about candidates. Not too many candidates had a positive review.
When we do favorable, unfavorable, most politicians get net negative these days. That didn't used to be the case, but it's really a function of the modern era. Republicans really don't like the Democrats. Democrats really don't like the Republicans. The end result is none of us like anybody. Well, we like our guys, but we don't like the other guys.
And we like you for getting up early
staying
with us. Thank you, Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy and the director of the Marquette Law School poll. Thanks, Charles. We appreciate it. We look forward to talking again. When we come back, there is more. This is Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.